Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mean Green Nation Podcast on a lovely Sunday morning after a grand Saturday. Was it noon? It's not even really afternoon. I guess it was technically afternoon because it began at noon. Folks, your North Texas Mean Green are 9-3. 9-3 on a season in which I think, what, Aldo was predicting them to win four games or something like that?
I started off at four, but then I bumped it up to six.
Aldo, you are the haters. You are the haters that everybody's talking about. And so I just wanted you to know that. You're the hater. I predicted nine wins. I looked at the team, I looked at the schedule, and I didn't believe that everybody else had enough for North Texas this season. I thought it would be different, that the offense wouldn't be so explosive, and I thought the defense would be a little bit more stout. As it is, it doesn't matter. So let's talk about the game. A disappointing game, a little scary game. Rice football player Sam Stewart was injured, lay on the field motionless for 20 minutes, and it was a pretty scary moment for everybody there. He seems like he's okay. The latest reports say that he is responsive, but he was they kept him overnight just for monitoring. That's the latest and greatest.
And they said the important part was that he was moving his extremities.
Yeah. I know we were all concerned because we didn't see him do any of that at all. We were looking for that, like, you know, as he was being carted off the field, maybe a wave, maybe something to kind of reassure the crowd, let everybody know that he was okay. We didn't see that, so I'm glad to hear that he is okay, or seemingly okay, or on the road to being okay.
I think it was just one of those weird hits, because the hit was clean, squared him up, and it was just a weird hit.
No, I mean, me and my friend were talking about that. It's like, man, football is a very dangerous game. That said, we are fans of it. We enjoy it. I don't know. I say sometimes that, like, football fandom is going to be like the smoking of, like, you know, 30 years from now. I mean, you know, like, you rewind 30 years ago, people were smoking all the time, right? Smoking, like, on planes. Everywhere, right? While the obstetrician was smoking while he was delivering your baby, I guess, you know? They handed a cigarette to the baby when he came out. Now if you walk around smoking, everybody looks at you like, what? You know? Maybe if you're vaping, they look at you differently, but still. I think it's going to be something like that.
I'll look at you worse if you're vaping.
Yeah. Like, who gave that baby a cigarette? All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, 9-3 on the season. This is the best season that we've seen here at North Texas, that I've seen, definitely, at North Texas in my, you know, time watching, covering, attending school. I know some people extend further back to the New Orleans Bowl years, and I think, depending on what happens this week, this very big, very large, very important week, conference championship week, this, you know, could be the best season in North Texas history, I guess, just accomplishment-wise?
Yeah. Right. Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just lay it out, right? We'll let you make the decision, ladies and gentlemen. This is already the best offense by per-game yardage totals. It's the best offense by, I think, scoring, right? Mm-hmm. And points per game. And this is the most regular season wins since, what was that, 2003, 2004? I think there was a 10-win season somewhere back in the 40s. So assuming North Texas wins, right, they beat Florida Atlantic, it would mean a conference championship year, which would match the Sun Belt years at 2003-04, right, when they won the conference. And does that not qualify as one of the greatest seasons ever? I know Hayden Fry had them ranked one year, but, you know.
I mean, considering that we haven't had too many great years, that automatically will vault it up to, you know, one of the greatest seasons ever. Mm-hmm. But that aside, it has been a very exciting year. It's been a great turnaround in just a couple seasons, going from 1-11 to potential 10 to 11 wins on the season. So yeah, it's got to be minimum top 10, if not top 5. You know. It's a little bit different from the Heart of Dallas Bowl season, with that really tough defense with an offense that would score points. A very efficient offense. This one's a very explosive offense with a defense that has struggled here and there.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said, all right, which one would you take? The 2013 team, 2017 team? I take the 2017 team only because I feel like this offense just has a little too much. Like, as good as the 2013 defense was, people did score on it, you know. They allowed some touchdowns.
And that 2013 offense wouldn't be able to compete in the 2017 Conference USA.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're both good teams. I'm glad for having watched both of them. All right, so back to the game, I guess. 30-14 win. The offense looked like it was going to roll over them, right? Big 52-yard pass to Rico Bucci earlier. Early in the game, you know, Nick Smith was balling out early, especially. Yeah, and he had an early touchdown. So that erased that 7-0 deficit. By the way, the last two times that North Texas has played at Rice, they've gone down at least 7-0. Last year, 17-0. This year, 7-0. Come out victorious either way. Seth Luttrell's 2-0 in Houston at Rice. So that was a bad interception, and I think that was Quentin Jackson running a bad route. He was running to my side. By the way, Jackson was getting open, and there was a couple times where Mason Fine didn't look his way, or not really he didn't look his way, but he was like the last option, and so he found other guys before he got that guy. When he got to that route, it looked like Jackson kept running. He should have stopped. He should have, because he was running up to the safety, he should have stopped short and come back for it, but he took it deep. So that looked like it was a him problem. And that's why it was such a bad interception. He threw it right to the DB and he took it all the way back. So there you go. Outside that, everything was, I mean, I don't know. It was more about working through the kinks for me.
Yeah, it was very vanilla.
I mean, the defense played well, but we expected them to play well because Rice is not very good. And, you know, they did. They stopped them a bunch of times. They only allowed the one touchdown. And even that was a little strange because it came immediately after that 20-minute delay. And, I mean, outside of that 52-yard run, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and it was strange because the defense was kind of just standing around waiting for a flag, I guess. Hands in the air.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. It's like they kind of jogged, I feel like, in that play.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was something strange about that whole thing. Like, nobody got mad after that. I wonder if everybody felt a little bad about the injury. I don't know. I don't want to speculate. I just know that it was weird, and I know that it was a 52-yard touchdown, and I also know that was the only touchdown that the defense allowed that Rice was able to get. I think it was one of, like, two big plays. The other one being like a pass to, I think it was the Aaron Cephas guy. That was, I mean, Rice didn't threaten. The defense was solid. They did what they were supposed to do. I wasn't really concerned. The offense struggled a lot. They had 25 first downs, and that was good, but only, what was it, 382 yards of offense or something like that? Like, if you got this game, these stats, and put them in any other game, we lose, right? But, you know, we didn't need to.
Yeah, I think part of it was game plan. We ran the ball a lot, so we ate up, and I don't know exactly how much time of possession we had, but
32 minutes.
So we were eating a lot of clock, trying to keep away. And two of those drives ended early. One with the interception, and the other one we punted, I believe.
Yeah.
So we were moving the ball. We were just weren't scoring, and I think that wasn't because for the lack of effort or trying. I think that the game plan was just to let's go home and not be injured, which a lot of injuries happen, I feel.
Yeah, they did. And the other, I mean, like, Jordan Murray on the sideline was like pointing to his leg, trying to work out like a limp he had there. Something was going on with his leg. And then he, you know, was playing and then he hurt his leg. Everybody's kind of banged up at this point in the season. I mean, they've already played, was it 12 games? That's a lot of games, 12 football games, with only 1 week break, and they practice in there. You know, this is why you want depth, you know, because you have another guy who's fresh and he can run like Nick Smith ran, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think yeah, go ahead.
First play of the game, Evan Johnson's returning, clocked. Like, oh, great. Now we're down two running backs, but he came back. All
right. Yeah, he took a big hit. He played pretty well. Hey, let's talk about Nick Smith, 178 yards rushing. If I didn't tell you that we lost our starting running back, you wouldn't know. You know? If you're a casual fan and you come out there and like, I heard North Texas can run the ball and their running back's pretty good. When you watch that game, you're like, well, there it is. Yeah, I see that. 178 yards rushing. That kid's pretty good. Looks like North Texas has a good running back, like they said they did. Cool. Then you walk away.
He did great. And I mean, he's not a huge running back, but he played big. He was using his blockers really well. He was hiding behind his blockers. It was kind of funny. He was hiding and then baiting linebackers and defensive linemen to one side, and then he just cut and go uphill on the other side. So that's why he was having huge holes. Is one, the offensive line was blocking well, and two, he was manipulating defenders to make his hole even bigger. So those are aspects that show you that Nick Smith's a quality running back, and we've been excited for him since last year. And his mom, I sat, and I think you said you sat with them yesterday, but I sat with her once last season, and man, she's really exciting to sit with because she gets into the game, she's shouting, she's yelling at the refs. It's greatness.
No, I didn't sit with Nick Smith's parents. This time we kind of sat by ourselves because we had a kid. Like we're like near the mob, the Mighty Owl Band there. But I mean, we had kids. It was just so our kid could kind of be in the middle.
Yeah.
But yeah, like no, Jalen Darden's family was just a couple rows behind us, and it was funny. They had went down, told somebody to like tap him on the shoulder so they could wave at him, and. So then he turned, and then he waved at them, and you can see they're all, hey, nice to you. Yeah. It's funny, you remember that they're just kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment when they're just looking for their family, and they wave all excitedly. And, you know, now being a newish dad, I can recognize the look of a kid seeing their parents and just waving. You're like, hey, how's it going? Hey, don't get hurt out there. So then, like, a couple plays later, he returns it all the way, and they're jumping up and down. Obviously, great moment for them. But yeah, so back to Nick Smith. He's really good. He has a different running style than Jeff. Obviously, I think Jeff's more upright, and he'll like. I think if you added, I don't know, if you gifted him genetically, Jeff Wilson, I'm talking about here, like another inch, and then like just a slightly bigger frame, he'd run just like Adrian Peterson because he wants to run through and then speed past everybody, and he runs upright. But I mean, Nick Smith is more like of a scat back, just because of his size. He'll yeah. like hop around and then sprint through, and then you don't know where he's coming from because he's so small. And you have Jordan Murray blocking for him, who's 8,000 feet tall and 900 feet wide, and then a little guy running around the side, little Nick Smith running behind him. That's hard to do.
Funny of it, but yeah. Like you said, Wilson's more of the upright run bender, while Nick Smith is more of the agility guy. He's able to make. He's not a one cut runner. He's shifty.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we're in good shape. We all felt like this, and we had this conversation a couple weeks back when we were talking on the show about running backs and what we're gonna do next season. I think we all feel comfortable and have felt comfortable with the idea of Nick Smith as a starting back. We lost some depth. I mean, right now we were kind of expecting to still have Willie Ivory, but it's fine. Again, running back is a position that you can always have a good back in. It's one of the oldest positions, and it's the most played position by every kid, right? When you get out there, everybody wants to be the running back, right? That you get the ball, and that's the first position you play. You outrun everybody, and you quickly see who's the best at doing that. And there should be no reason why we shouldn't have a good back here. Now, maybe he's not the biggest or the strongest, but we should have somebody good at North Texas, especially given our history here. I mean, we could always point to say to history, hey, look, you could be like Jeff Wilson, you could be like Patrick Cobbs, you could be like Jamario Thomas, you could be like I mean, going all the way back to other guys that I'm blanking on right now.
Brandon Bird, Pegram, all kinds of people.
Yeah, good backs. Good backs in North Texas.
Yeah, and with using the air raid, you know, you don't have to be... While I would like a big bruiser like Brandon Bird again, you don't have to have one in this offense. Because, you know, I expect Nick Smith next year to go over 1,000 scrimmage yards because they're going to be running Evan Johnson and Nick Smith in the pass game for sure. A lot more often than they did with Wilson.
Yeah. And even then, they gave, like, I think Jeff had his best pass receiving season last year. Like, I don't know why they kind of reduced his role in the pass game.
Mostly because Bussey was healthy. They had Jalen Guyton working it, and Darden and Lawrence. So there's a difference there. Those four receivers, either present or healthy, and then you can reduce the workload on Jeffrey Wilson. So that made a huge difference.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to speculate on. Like, I think it's more like, hey, you know, our number one passing option doesn't need to be screen pass it to Jeff Wilson. Maybe we'll just throw it deep to Rico Bussey, and that's fine. So then, you know, you don't do this other thing. I mean, it's good. We're talking about the number one offense or the number two offense in Conference USA, right? Like, we're basically right about to explode in efficiency and things. So, like, right now we're really good, but you can see the holes in our game. I keep talking about how we only play about two quarters of really great football and then two quarters of questionable football. There's still some self-inflicted wounds here and there. Like, you get a holding call. You get a Mike Lawrence penalty call that brings back a Turner Smiley amazing catch and run. You know, you get two sacks allowed to Rice, you know? Things like that, and you're like, what are we doing? Like, I guess if there is an ideal, and maybe it's something like what Oklahoma is doing right now. I mean, they have Baker Mayfield, who's probably the best college football player in the nation right now. But, you know, they're scoring 8 out of 9 possessions. Like, yes, that is nearing, like, the historic levels of college football. But that's what you should be aiming for. And if you fall short of that, then, you know, the whole aim for the moons and you'll fall among the stars, whatever that quote is. You get what I'm saying, right? You aim for 10, and if you fall short, you get an 8 or 9, you know? But if you only aim for 9 and you fall short, then you get 6 or 7. You know, that's the whole idea.
Well, and with a team this young, they're still learning on the offense. It's a learning process. They're figuring out and gelling together, and they're going to come back next year.
And get better.
Yeah, I hate to sound so cliche, but they're going to come back even stronger, even better, this and that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so I've been, I guess this podcast is kind of like we try to use it as like a guide, you know what I mean? Because it's Sunday morning that we're recording, but Monday, Tuesday when you're probably listening, right? Sitting in your cubicle, and you're thinking, man, I can't believe they do all these interceptions, or I can't believe we didn't, whatever the thing is. So we try to be the reasonable voice, right? The calm, reasonable response. And the thing is that, yeah, we talked about how you always got to grab it while it's available, right? Like, right now is the time to go for it. Right now is the time to try to win things, because you never know what's going to happen next season, right? Maybe Graham Harrell leaves for a better gig, right? Maybe Seth Luttrell actually does get scooped up by somebody, by a desperate athletic director that wants to give him, you know, all the money that there is. Maybe Mason Fine gets injured, right? Maybe, I don't know, anything happens. Anything crazy. Crazy stuff can happen. Maybe we have the kind of season that Marshall had last year out of nowhere, where you're like, well, we've got Chase Litton. We have a lot of returning starters. We should be good. If we're down a little bit, it'd just be, you know, like a normal 8-win season, but we should be still Marshall. And then you go 3-9, and you're like, what the hell happened? And they come back and they win, what is it, 7 games, 8 games this season? I forget it. Don't remember. They lost to Southern Miss, right? So 7 games. You see my point, right? You never know what happens, right? You could look at Mike White, right, in Western Kentucky. They felt really good about their season. They felt really good about the team. They thought they can overcome the coaching staff change. And what would they finish with? 6 wins? Barely 6 wins?
Barely, yeah.
Yeah, and they got blown out ridiculously by Florida International, a team that went was it 2-9, 3-9 last season. They were just above Marshall last year. So you never know. Like, you never know what you're going to get. And so, yeah, you want to grab it and enjoy it right now, and you want to take every advantage of it. But the other thing is that you know the natural progression of players, you know, especially quarterbacks. Last season, Mason Fine was struggling, and so if you're using the logic, the A logic that I was just giving you right now, you're like, well, maybe he's not the guy. Maybe we need another guy. Mason Fine's not the dude. He needs to prove he's the dude. That is true. Mason Fine needed to prove that he was the guy. We thought maybe he had the tools that he had, that he would project to that person if he worked hard, if he did all the right things. But yeah, he had to prove that was going to be his gig. So if there really was very hard and they were thinking about maybe we should start Quinn Shanbour here, I don't know. But he needed to prove it. And so far he's proved it. Yeah, he's set the North Texas passing record here. He's the guy. Next season, he'll have to prove that he's the guy again, but he has the benefit of the doubt. We've seen him do it on stage after stage after stage. We played 12 games this season. He's been on, you know, 12 stages, and he's passed every test. We've seen him in lots of different situations, and I don't really have any questions about Mason Fine. Like, you know, who against a rival, what is he, you know, or on at home or on the road? I mean, he does what he does. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's not perfect, but he's, you know, set the single season passing yard record, single season passing touchdown record. So something's working. He's
yeah.
You can't call him not the guy. You can't say he's not improved. You can't. He's done everything he needs to do to disprove any detractors. He is doing great. Sure, there's situations that he can improve upon, but hey, he set this baseline of, you know, 3,000 some odd yards.
Yeah.
Something that hasn't been done before at North Texas since 1994 and then the 1960s. So, yeah. You know, part of it is it shouldn't be this hard to get this much volume, this much production. But on the other hand, it's North Texas. We haven't been able to do this. And he is exceeding all those expectations and all those records.
Yeah, there's a lot of places in college football that have this kind of thing where you're like, well, it hasn't been done here, and it's kind of weird. It seems like, you know, in reading all the Chip Kelly rumors this week, a lot of people talking about UCLA very similarly to the way they talked about North Texas, but just on a different level. They're like, wow, you know, like UCLA is a famous school. They have the name, they have the sports, but why does football suck? Why is it always underperformed? And they're like, well, they haven't made a commitment to the football, put it first, build the facilities, give the money, you know, invest the money. Does that sound very similar to little old North Texas here? Yeah, same thing. Like, well, now we're investing. Now we have everybody pulled the right way. I want to see what's going on. So we're kind of going around on a long tangent here, but back to Mason Fine being good. Because he works hard, because he's improved from year to year, because he's showed what he had in high school on those stages, and he improved at the college level, he improved from freshman to sophomore year, we can expect that he'll improve from his sophomore to his junior year. And so all those things you pointed out, the mistakes, got to cut down on those interceptions, you know, got to be a little bit more decisive in certain situations. Those are good. I think he'll be better at that, right? After playing 12 games as a starter and succeeding, you know, he's seeing this field differently than he was as a freshman, and he will see this field differently when he's a junior.
Yeah, he'll finally be an upperclassman. You know, he's still a sophomore. He's still making sophomore mistakes. but, you know, when I was watching him yesterday play, and he was taking these hits. He's bouncing off these hits. I don't want to call him Mighty Mouse because of his stature. I'll call him Mighty Mouse even if he's 6'6", because he was hitting those guys. The second time he's hurt a defensive back trying to hit him, I think.
That's crazy. Bouncing off
the defensive ends. He can take a hit.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather him not take those hits, but I mean, it's good. Yeah, you want to.
But he's a gamer.
Yeah. So yeah, all right. Mason finally played well. Turner Smiley played well, but a lot of it didn't count. He was finding the zones. The offense played better than it looked, and like you said, there weren't a whole lot of possessions. There weren't a whole lot of chances there. We still averaged like 5.5 yards per play, which is right around a season average. We just didn't get a whole lot of plays, and some of that, yeah, was we didn't score in the red zone touchdowns. We just kicked field goals, and that's been a bit unusual. I mean, last week we were scoring touchdowns every time. This week, field goals. It's
the
always
offensive line.
I feel like we went and did a job, but the offensive line was bad, I thought.
Yeah. They played pretty relaxed. Looked like they were just having fun out there playing for next week. But the offensive line did look terrible, did allow 3 sacks on 1 drive.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about that. And that's concerning going into next week when they have to face an even tougher defensive line. And going through all the injuries that they've had over the past couple of weeks, that kind of worries you to, you know, how bad is it going to be next week? Is Mason Fine going to have enough time? Is he going to be able to throw it downfield, or are we going to have to just get what we can underneath and just try to pick apart the FAU defense?
Let's see. I'll give it a quick, because we're going to do a podcast this week, or at least we were going to try to, like all about the conference championship game right around Wednesday. Just full on conference championship talk, because it deserves its own hour and we need to talk about it. But I will say that Florida Atlantic was at their peak when we played them. They were peaking, you know. They went on a run, I think, the week before. We were like if we're not the peak, we're the beginning of that peak. They had just blown out like Old Dominion, Middle Tennessee. They blew us out. They beat Western Kentucky and they beat Marshall. And then they beat, I forget who else they beat. But as the games have gone on, they've played a little worse. And I don't know if that's teams that they have a lot of film on them, and so they're stopping some of the clever things that they're doing, or the players are just, you know, getting beat up, getting tired, that kind of thing, or, you know, just natural season, they're just kind of not playing as well, right? I don't know. You can trace that same thing for North Texas, though, right? We haven't been playing really well. We've been talking about it since right around November, early November. We just haven't been playing that well. We keep talking about it every week. Well, we could have done better here. I mean, yeah, we did great against Army, but the defense sucked. It's going to be a different game because these are not the same teams. Everybody's a little bit smarter as a football player. A little bit more banged up as a football player. And, you've already seen this stuff.
You're making a good point. And I think we came out of that slump around the ODU game. But even though we've scored 45 points against UTEP, it felt like we left a lot of points out on the field. And that's amazing to say. We scored 45 points, but we could have scored more. And, you know, I hope we go into that mentality, or with that mentality, into the FAU game. Because I know we can score more than, what was it, 13 or 17 freaking points in the third quarter against the FAU? We can definitely score.
Yeah, I mean, we scored 4 touchdowns against UTSA. We scored 4 touchdowns against Florida Atlantic. We scored 6 touchdowns against Old Dominion, 3 against Louisiana Tech, 6 against UTEP, 7 touchdowns against Army, only 3 against Rice. And, I mean, you can tell where our standards are when we're like, we only scored 3 touchdowns. Like, what is the deal? In 2016, we scored, 3 touchdowns, only 3 touchdowns, way more often. We only scored 42 touchdowns in 2016. We've scored 57 so far this year. In 2015, only 22 touchdowns. We scored 4, Western Kentucky and UTSA. Those are the only 2 times that we even tried.
In 2015, Jeffrey Wilson scored 1 touchdown.
Yeah, and this year he had, 16?
16 or 17.
Was it? Yeah, 16. After last season when he had 14. I want to talk a little bit about Nick Smith real quick, to talk about. You can run in the air raid. Like, the only pure full air raid that can't run, that doesn't get big yardage for running backs, is like Mike Leach's version. And even then, I think he's had a couple 1,000-yard rushers. He just likes to throw the ball a lot. Like, to a ridiculous extent.
That, and they'll have two backs on the field at the same time.
Yeah. Like this season, they have, 860 yards rushing. Leading rusher is Jamal Morrow. He has 522 yards. And their next guy, James Williams, 381 yards. But, yeah, they usually have a couple guys with, like, 600, 500 yards. That's kind of how they do things. But you can... You can why did I have, why am I in 2013? Sorry, 2017. Yeah, right. I was right. Yeah, I mean, but like teams like what am I thinking? Oklahoma, they have a lot of air raid principles. That is like 70% air raid. They have, you know, a good run game. They can run the ball. Good teams can run the ball. Good teams attack you with everything. You know, like they, you have a 3,000, 4,000 yard passer, 1,000 yard rusher. You know, they can control time of possession when they want to. They don't just need to kind of be a gimmick team. And you
and in a school like Oklahoma, sorry to interrupt, they can get that 4-star, 5-star back, that 5'11", 220-pound running back.
Yeah. Yes, this is true. But even like, yeah, I mean, A&M has a 700-yard rusher. And, you know, they're a not good air raid team right now. My point is that you can have a run game in North Texas that just because we're going more air raid doesn't mean that we can't have 1,000-yard rushers here. You know, I think you can see it. If you're looking, if you use your football eyes, put your football glasses on, you spread the field. And, you know, a lot of teams use that whole idea. We spread the field, we'll spread the run. But, you know, the problem is when they stop respecting the spread and they just attack the run. But when you have a quarterback that can throw the ball, you're going to have more space. And so if you have a running back that can attack that space and take advantage of that space, you're going to have success in the run game. The question is, can you have success in short yardage? Like, what is it better to run it? Is it better to pass it? Like, what is the ideal strategy once you get in short yardage? Because you built for the spread to run. Can you spread to run it in short yardage? It's a question, and that I'd like a bigger back that can move the pile at that point, right? Or maybe just I don't know. I like to throw it and just throw the ball. But you gotta choose something, and you gotta say this is how we're gonna do it, and then it has to work basically. And there are lots of different ways to get yardage, and you know, I like Mike Leach, and Mike Leach says, you know, we're gonna throw it. They believe they're gonna throw it, and it's like 4th-and-1, and they'll throw the ball. But they'll get it because they believe in it. They practice it. Everybody knows that's what they're going to do, and they trust it. I think we say, yeah, we're gonna run it. We're going to run in short yardage. That's how we're going to get the ball. We don't always get it. I mean,
I feel like we don't really always get it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is there. Is it like just we'll improve by improving our offensive line, and you know, I don't know. Is that our plan? I guess it's our plan. I don't know.
I would hope so. And I feel like the trenches have been not necessarily ideal. They're not bad, but it could be better. You know, there's a lot of instances where we haven't been able to get that 1 yard. It happened against Southern Miss. It's happened against UT. It's happened against every single team where we get down to 3-1 or 3-2 and we can't pick up those extra 1 or 2 yards.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of nitpicking, but I think that's the next level for this offense. It's what this whole beginning of the show is about. The next level for this offense is getting those short yardage plays, converting on the smaller stuff to keep drives alive, or to not waste so much energy, mental energy, getting to those positions and figuring out what to do in those positions. But yeah, I think it was against UAB or UTSA. We got down there and we had to run like 3 or 4 plays before we scored, right? You know, we could just go down there and score. We save hits on our quarterback. We save hits on our linemen. We save, you know, everybody's a little bit fresher if we can score in 8 plays instead of 11. In 7 plays instead of 10, you know?
Yeah, and it's not a great strategy to avoid that 3rd-and-1, but you know, if we avoid that 31, it works. We score on second down or whatever, second and 10, and then it's like a 75-yard bomb to to Guyton. But when we do get put on this, those situations, we need to be able to convert to keep those drives alive. You know, it was something that we struggled with last year. Last year, we couldn't get those 75-yard bombs or be able to.
We can do anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news is, yeah, we have been able to score on those first and second down. We're amazing. Third down is where we struggle, but a lot of teams struggle on third. Even then, we struggle relative to other, you know, really good football teams. But there's a lot of teams. I mean, like, look, UTSA wishes they had our offense. They would take our offense as is, all the problems with it, all the things that we complain about. They would take it, all of it, because their offense sucks. Charlotte would take it. Like, Charlotte, I think Hassan Clue was, you know, like, he counted for like 80% of their offense or something like that. He scored like 19 of 20 touchdowns or something crazy like that. They would take our offense, right? UTEP would take anybody's offense but theirs. They would definitely take our offense. And, you know, a lot of their Twitter followers are asking if they can have Graham Harrell and actually take our offense, you know? So we're complaining, but we're, you know, in the good way. Like, man, yeah, we could be better. It's fun. Yeah. We could be great. So that's the good stuff.
Yeah, I'm not saying we suck. Like, next year, I truly believe that Mason Fine's going to go out there and break his records all over again.
And he should. I think he should. I mean, just for a lot of reasons. I think we, you know, maybe we'll – not only are the guys that are on the team going to get better, Darden, Guyton, Bussey, and then a couple of the other guys that are, like, on the roster that didn't – get a whole lot of time, Hare Griffin, Pirtle. But we're going to add a couple dudes, right? We're going to add to their number. And so everybody's going to get a little bit better, and we're going to get a little bit deeper, right? And I think we're going to get some more production out there. And how do you stop that? You know, a fully operational Mason Fine.
And we're going to need to have a great offense, and I don't mean to bring it back to the negative side, because we're going to have to outplay our defense next year. We got a lot of guys graduating.
Yeah, we do. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. We'll talk recruiting later. Let's kind of move on and talk about the game a little bit more. It's great to see Nick Smith score. It's great to see him run like that. I couldn't help but feel bad about Jeff Wilson and how his season may be ended already.
Yeah, and he could have had a really big game yesterday.
Yeah. Let's talk some bowl projections also, because I know you care more about that than you do the conference championship game. You're not even going to watch the conference championship game, right? That's what you said. You're just going to turn it off. Go to the park.
Yeah.
All right. Austin, fan of the show, friend of the show, Austin Rogers says, in hater of George Dunham, mortal enemy of George Dunham. I've seen three bowl projections this morning, and all of them have us playing in the New Mexico Bowl against San Diego State or Fresno State. Are we locked for the New Mexico Bowl, or will we get something better? I don't think that we're locked for anything. You know, I don't. For some reason, I don't. I've seen a lot of New Mexico Bowl projections, and I don't really hate any of them. I'm not the biggest fan. I'm not the biggest fan of the New Mexico Bowl for us because of how far it is. Like, we don't really, you know, I think they think Southwest is all the same, the people making these projections. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bad trip. I mean, New Mexico is nice, especially if it's a little cold where you are. You're like, hey, this is nice. It's, you know, it's sunny. It's not so bad out here in New Mexico, right?
Maybe there's mountains.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to Albuquerque and go look at Breaking Bad locations, right?
I want to go.
I don't think anybody was excited about going to New Mexico Bowl, though. I mean, and San Diego State would be fun just because you see the Penny kid, right? Fresno State is good also. You get to see Jeff Tedford's new crop of people out there. He turned that program around. Those would be fun matchups, and New Mexico wouldn't be a terrible bowl to go to. The only way that would be real fun for me personally was if we play like a Colorado State, and I've seen us matched up in a couple of projections with Colorado State, only because I know a guy that went to Colorado State Who, by the way, when like Colorado State came to play UTSA, he said he got super drunk and was like in the stands, like, and then everybody was telling him to shut up. He was just like heckling everybody on UTSA. So I think, you know, that's also kind of how we're buddies. So I was like, good for you. That's the way to do it. All right. So I was like, dude, we should go together, and like you'll dress as a ram, right? These are the Rams, and I'll dress as an eagle, and we'll just, that's how we'll go to the game. And we were
going to hold hands when you walk into the stadium.
When we walk in, but then we're going to be enemies when we're in the stadium, and then we'll walk out friends. And that's the story of college football, ladies and gentlemen, sportsmanship, and stupid bits. So, yeah, anyway, that New Mexico Bowl, I'm not in love with that one. Again, Heart of Dallas Bowl is the best bowl for us to go to for lots of reasons. For whatever reason, the 200,000 alumni in the Dallas-Fort Worth area do not like to fly. They do not like to travel. They like to stay in Dallas-Fort Worth. And so that's why if you say, hey, just drive down to the Cotton Bowl, go to that game, they say, okay. Okay, we'll show up. 38,000 people, roughly, every time.
Some people are calling for Tech and North Texas at the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
That'd be fun. That'd be a fun game. I think Texas Tech is beatable. That'd be kind of tough because they would know how to stop our offense. And they have a little bit more talent. But that'd be a fun matchup, right? A couple air raid teams. Grammar, it'll be a fun story. We'll get a little attention. That would be good. And, you know, it would feel good because we signed that deal with Tech, but it doesn't take place until, like, 2022 or something like that, right?
2025 even, I think.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. Like, hey, Adam, when your kid is in college, then we start our series with Tech. I'm like, oh, okay. the answers to those questions are those. I got some other ones that are not tweeted at me. Is that kid okay? The Rice kid. Again, the last update from Rice was that he was fine and alert and responsive, and they were going to keep him overnight for monitoring. We haven't seen anything new from them, and you know, I checked right before the show started. The other thing was, hey, did that game matter? What did that game mean? Play Rice, what did it mean? Well, it meant 9 wins. That's really it. 9 wins. We're 9-3 in the league. And 9 wins means a lot when you're talking about resumes, right, later on, when you're talking about building a program, when you're even when you're arguing with your friends on Twitter, and they're like, North Texas hasn't done anything. Like, really? We won 9 wins, at least 9 wins in the past 3 seasons. It's good for those kinds of arguments. But it doesn't actually get you, like, 9 wins means we're now in blah, blah, blah. It doesn't, not a whole lot there. But I think most importantly is that it separates us in quality from the rest of Conference USA this season, because I think I saw somebody say that there are 78 bowl eligible teams, and that's just enough for the available bowls. And so anything beyond that might be a problem. We might have too many bowl eligible teams and not enough bowls.
In Conference USA itself.
Yeah. And so when you're looking at things, you're going to say, okay, conference champion. We'll assume that it's Florida Atlantic just because they're favorite and just for the purpose of this talk. Florida Atlantic, then it's North Texas, right? Because we're the next one. We got 9 wins. They're like, okay, we definitely want that North Texas team. They got a lot of alums, fun offense, good story. Let's take them. We'll put them wherever. And as you go down the list and you reach like a UTSA, I think everybody likes the way they travel, maybe. But they, what is it, 3-5 in conference? And,
something like that.
Yeah, and if you're choosing between UTSA and, say, a La Tech, you like, okay, well, UTSA fans travel well, but they're not Louisiana Tech fans. You know, yeah. Louisiana Tech has history, yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you decide that there. Like, I mean, right, if you're choosing between a Western Kentucky and a Middle Tennessee, I mean, I don't know who you pick between those. Those are pretty, you're like, okay, I guess, I don't know. You know what's funny is that Florida Atlantic, I don't think they're going to travel well. You know, nobody travels to their home games well, so.
Nobody goes to their home games.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're definitely going to be a story because everybody's going to tune in and watch TV. And that's what the bowl games, that's what matters there. It's, yeah, the people traveling, going to the game, filling it up, but then also it's filling it up and it looks good on TV when you broadcast it, you know? Who's, are you going to tune in for Louisiana Tech? Are you going to tune in for UTSA? Are you going to tune in for Lane Kiffin? Yeah, that's really what that's about. And so that's why they can have 15 fans, but they're going to have a lot more people tuning in because of curiosity. And that's what Florida Atlantic wants right now.
And I wonder if they pick, like, the Boca Raton Bowl just to stay around.
You know, I don't know. I don't know enough about them. We should get that the Shane guy on there. I'm like, hey, kid, where are you going? You know, Conference USA, I'm done. He's a good heel. That's what he was. I'm done with Conference USA. I'm over it. I was watching the Jim Carrey and Andy. It's called Jim and Andy. Jim Carrey documentary, movie, whatever it is, about him when he was doing Andy Kaufman. And, yeah, it just reminds me, the kid Shane reminds me of Andy Kaufman being the heel wrestler to Jerry Lawler back in the day. Or at least with the clips they showed on the thing. That's what that's about, ladies and gentlemen. UAB is going to be fun. UAB is like, so here are the things. The bowl eligible teams in order of record, as best I can put them right now. So it's Florida Atlantic 9-3, 8-0. North Texas 9-3, 7-1. Then you have Southern Miss and UAB, both 8-4, both 6-2 in conference. Both travel well, both have history. I think UAB is a little bit better story right now. And then you have FIU, doesn't travel well. Newish. They got Butch Davis there, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you want them. Marshall, history. They're 7-5. They'll probably get more attention. You know, they're more popular. And then you have Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky. I think Louisiana Tech is a team with the most history out of those three. Western Kentucky doesn't travel well. Again, they're another team that doesn't travel well to their own home games. Only like they've averaged like 15,000 people or something like that.
But terrible. I think the way the offense produces will likely garner them a better bowl bid than say like a Middle Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And this we're like determining tiebreakers here. I wonder what would have happened if Old Dominion would have beat Middle Tennessee and Old Dominion was in this conversation. And so then you have UTSA. They're a winning team, right? They're 6-5. You know, Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky are all 6-6, and they are, you know, that's 500 folks, in case you didn't know. But so UTSA is 6-5, but they're only 3-5 in conference. I think that would bother me if I'm, you know, you're choosing teams. You're like, this is the team 3-5. Again, I know that we went to a bowl game last year when we were five win team. I get it, I know it. But we're talking about this season, and when you have to pick between a this and a that, you know, a 5-win team and a no win team, you know, like that kind of thing. A 3-5 UTSA in conference versus a 4-4 Western Kentucky. I don't know. I don't know who you choose.
And UTSA started out 3-0, and I don't know if I'm calling correctly, and ended 3-5 on the season.
Yeah,
so that's great.
So. All right. Per conference regulations, all teams with 7 or more wins shall be placed in conference bowls prior to any other bowl-eligible team with a winning record. So, Boca Raton, Gasparilla Bowl. I don't even know what that is. New Mexico Bowl, Bahamas Bowl, New Orleans Bowl, Armed Forces Bowl, Independence Bowl. And that's the thing. We have 10 spots, so that beyond this stuff, beyond these bowls, there's going to be the other ones, like the ones that don't fill. And they're like, well, please, somebody join our bowl. I mean, I think the best bowl here of the available one, because Heart of Dallas is technically not available to us, is probably the Independence Bowl. I think it's the most popular. You get to play an ACC or SEC school. That's pretty intense. I think that's the bowl to go to, Independence Bowl.
Yeah, it's got more prestige definitely than the Heart of the Dallas Bowl by quite a large margin. There's a better payout. I think the payout's double.
Yeah.
So you get to not only pay for your hotel, but you also get to keep a little bit more money, or at least spread some of the money around. And you get to play a quality opponent, like you said, SEC or ACC, you said?
Yeah. Yes.
So your P5 school.
Yeah, and I don't even know, like, again, I haven't looked at all the bowl projections there. I don't know if they have enough teams to fill their slots there. So it might not be an ACC or SEC. But I think the payout is still remains the same. So I think, you know, that's good for that amount. I think Armed Forces Bowl is cool, but I don't want to play Army. So that's negative for us. And that's a 2 days before Christmas. That's a cool bowl to go to, and I think if like you're maybe like a UTSA, that's where you're aiming for, or you know, even like a La Tech, maybe you'd like that one. I think I've seen somebody say that they want to see UTSA versus Army in there. I would like a New Orleans bowl. I think that would be great for the old timers. They can, you know, show us what they did in New Orleans, or maybe lie to us about what they did in New Orleans when they go there, right? That would be fun. It'd be kind of a return, we brought back Daryl Dickey. It'd be kind of cool to end the season going to New Orleans Bowl again, right? We'd play a Sun Belt team too, and that'd be kind of fun to beat up on a Sun Belt team. Like, I think I'd like to play a team that's really good, that, you know, like a prestige school, so we can do that thing. But I wouldn't mind beating up on a Sun Belt school,
like Troy.
I'm scared of Troy, but yeah, like Troy.
I'm gonna say.
Yeah, Troy's real good, and Neil Brown's real good. But I don't know. That would be a fun matchup. You know, bowl games are always kind of weird, kind of fun. You get to prepare for that team. That would be fun. That would be fun to see. I mean, we can get a version of that UCF-USF game, like something crazy like that. That'd be fun. I mean, you know, it's an exhibition game, basically. The Bahamas Bowl, again, that's a bowl game that's for the players primarily, and it would be great for them to go. But yeah.
I mean, yeah, that one's for the players, and I wouldn't argue against it just because they get to do that. They get to be rewarded with a trip out there. Yeah. Just like, you know, don't have the opportunity to go. So my preferences would be in order, probably Independence, New Orleans, and then Heart of Dallas.
Yeah. Gasparilla Bowl, Tropicana Field, St. Petersburg, Florida. What? That's what I say to that. Unless we get picked for that one, then I'm like, you know, the Gasparilla Bowl is an excellent bowl, and they provide community outreach in the form, you know, whatever. The Boca Raton Bowl. Nope, I'm not going to that one. That would be three strikes, right? I would have denied Boca Raton thrice by not going to that bowl. So,
in one season?
Huh?
In one season.
Yeah, three times in one season. And I never went there when we were in the Sun Belt together, so I say... there it is. I don't. And again, we have the wild card teams, the wild card selections, because you never know. There might be
I could see us in the St. Petersburg Bowl, and I could see the desire to want to go there from a coaching perspective, trying to get some have recruits out there to see you in Florida, because you can grab some recruits from Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know who the other tie-in would be there though. I don't know if you have that in front of you.
No, I don't. It's the American or something like that. I think I just closed it. All right. So, I mean, I don't know. There's our bowl talk. I don't really want to think about that right now, honestly. We're going to find out December 3rd, immediately after the game. So I'm going to be super sad, or maybe it's like the salve on the game. My early gut feeling says we lose to Florida Atlantic just because, and here it is. It's not that they're so much better than us, like on talent. You know, I think on our day, we are a team that can be very tough to play with. Our offense, really good. Our defense, opportunistic, right? And can make plays. But I think the way you prepare for those kinds of things is you have a good coaching staff that can make it easier to accentuate your strengths or reduce the strengths of the other team. And again, I've been saying this. I think Lane Kiffin's a great coach. I think he's a good coach. He has attention to detail, and he learned from the attention to detail master. Now, that said, you know, Nick Saban lost this week, right? He lost to Auburn. But I think the fact that everybody's kind of like, oh, man, what an upset, what a big loss, kind of tells you again. I mean, Nick Saban's the best college football coach that there is, right? They are locks for the college football playoff every year. They have the best team every year. They dominate every year because of his attention to detail, because of his recruiting, his attention to detail in recruiting also. And, you know, Lane Kiffin, who was a good coach in his own right, learned from the best. And I think for whatever you think about the guy, he has a lot of, I mean, he's had some really good mentors. Pete Carroll, Lane Kiffin, his dad, Monty Kiffin's a good coach.
Well, on top of that, Lane Kiffin took over a team with a roster that was, one, full, and two, that roster has been on a preseason watch list for past couple seasons. So that's a talented roster. They've had the ammunition there for a while that the previous coach wasn't able to take advantage of. Seth Luttrell came in and took over a team that was depleted. We had an FCS number of scholarships. We're still not up to 100%, and he is having to put together his own team from scratch, pretty much, because there's only a handful of players on offense, several on defense from the previous regime.
Yeah.
I thought we were like another two seasons away from the conference title game, and for Luttrell to be able to do that with this roster is, has me licking my lips for the rest of the career here.
Sorry, excuse me. So that's the deal between these two teams. I think they did. We saw a little bit of that, and whether you're like, it was effort. It was just effort that you got to play harder, thinking you're too good, going out there, have speed playing against the Florida Atlantics. I don't know if it was all that. I don't think it was a hot tub. I don't think it was taking anybody's wife over there. I don't think any of those things did it. I think, the UTSA game did affect that game in the way that a big emotional win affects every game. I mean, you see it across college football, right? All the time. You have a big win, turn around and get a loss. Because, one, these are 20-year-old kids. Two, they're not professionals. Or are they? Three, they're humans. So, I mean, going into this game, I think they're going to be better prepared for what they have to face here. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be fun. There's a chance. Obviously there's a chance. We'll talk about it a little bit more during the week. We're going to give it a full hour or so. We're going to have some stats. We're going to have hotter sports opinions.
Some film review.
Yeah, all that good stuff. I mean, I've been saving a lot of my thoughts about Florida Atlantic for this week. I've been excited about it. I want this rematch. I want the revenge.
But yeah, I'm scared. One against Army.
Yeah, but I'm scared though.
Now, if I did go, my costume would be I would wear a hot tub around me and take pictures all over the stands. That'll be my costume.
That's good. I like that. Hey, it's kind of like the game didn't mean anything. Hey, 9 wins. North Texas won 9 games, 9-3 on the season. That means I was right, which I think for me is probably the only thing I love more than when North Texas wins 9 games. I predicted 9 wins in the season. It came in a little different order, but I think the lesson here is that you just listen to me, everybody. Just listen to what I have to say,
and not me.
Everything will be all right. Don't listen to Aldo, because he's going to undersell it.
Hey, I set the bar low, and when we exceed it, everybody's happy.
I'm kind of scared what you tell your kids, man. They're like, hey, Dad, can I be? You could probably be a plumber's apprentice. That's about the cap I see on you, son.
You can't be Robin Hood in that play. You can be more of just another Merryman.
Yeah, maybe a tree.
not even a tree. Merryman number 4.
That's you, son. So good stuff. I mean, it's good. I think a lot of it has to do with the conference, and that's fine. I mean, this is a very winnable conference. You saw it. I mean, a few worst to first, right? North Texas was like bottom of the division. Now we're first in the division. FIU did it. Marshall's bowl eligible after finishing bottom of the division on their side. Florida Atlantic was bottom of the division. Division champs, 8-0. Anything can happen. I mean, anything can happen at any time. You just need the right influx of talent. I mean, it's not over. We're starting to look forward to next season because of the early signing period. It was December 20th, right? Just a month from now, teams are already firing the coaches. Stuff's happening. Arizona State fired Todd Graham.
Did they?
Yeah, he just got fired. Arizona State fired their guy. Mike Riley got fired in Nebraska. Scott Frost is going to be a candidate at a lot of places. I mean, so then you look at like a Scott Frost, right? He turned around 0-12 UCF. They're ranked number 15 now. And then he's probably going to leave. And then what happens there, right? They... Well,
as a little detail right there, they went from 0-12 to 12-0.
Yeah. Yeah. In, was it two seasons?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Belima is gone.
Yeah. They were talking last night during the Washington State, the Apple Cup, they were saying, hey, Mike Leach would be a candidate at Arkansas. Like, they needed to rehab Mike Leach a little bit. And Washington State's another one of those schools that, you know, they're like, they really need a commitment to football here. They haven't really gave it the kind of commitment. You know, the facilities are lacking. And then they did a whole lot of that with Mike Leach there, and he turned him into a – you know, like three straight bowl games in five seasons, whatever it is, and then, you know, they were number 13 before they got blown out. By the way, the whole Pac-12 is weird. I think somebody tweeted, and I forget who it was, I'll give him credit. The Pac-12 South champion, USC, got blown out by Notre Dame. The Pac-12 North champion, Stanford, was blown out. They blew out Notre Dame, and both those teams got blown out by the team that was getting blown out last night. Washington State. So, weird stuff. Transitive property doesn't work. So, I don't know. So, Mike Leach might go to Arkansas. I saw that they were saying on the show last night. What does this mean for our guys? I don't know. There's always the strange interest in Frank Wilson at UTSA. And, I really think that Seth Luttrell's probably going to stay another season. I don't see anybody really being sold on him just yet.
Yeah, it'll be difficult to take a chance on him right now without winning a title game and without winning a bowl game yet.
Yeah, but I do think that the guy that people will take a chance on is Graham Harrell. Not necessarily for a coaching gig, but for a step up in offensive coordinator. Like, I mean, maybe Mike Leach goes to doesn't go to Arkansas, but a guy like one of his, you know, maybe the defensive coordinator goes there. And then he hires like a Graham Harrell to run the offense. You know, I could see something like that. Was that guy's name Grinch or something like that at Washington State? Something like that. I can see that kind of thing happening. You know, maybe some combination thereof. Maybe I don't know. Maybe Graham Harrell does get a coaching job offer from like UTEP or something. That'd be weird too. You never know with these things. I mean, all this stuff. It's beginning to get weird, and it's beginning to get weird earlier because of the signing period. So, folks, we'll talk to you next week. Well, not next week. About Wednesday is when we're going to do our recording, so it's going to be up for Thursday. Lots to talk about this week. Good win at Rice, even though it was very ugly and the offense underperformed. But it was a good win. They did enough to win. They controlled the game. Nothing was scary. Nobody got hurt.
And they did it on purpose. I feel like they did it on purpose. It was intentional. Even as sluggish as they might have looked, the run game was awesome. They're just trying to get out of there healthy.
Yeah, good stuff. 9-win North Texas. I like that. I'm not gonna quite get that tattooed, but maybe I write it down on a napkin or something. I don't know.
And I hope the players hot tub it up this weekend.
Yeah, just hot. I mean, that'd be great if they hot tubbed it up. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.